This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about home improvement today and focusing on problems that might come up when we have temperature swings like we've seen this week. Ice dams, frozen pipes, leaky windows, and all that that goes with living in the cold climate. But never fear, because John Freiberger is back with us. John is a Wisconsin registered home inspector and has more than four decades of home improvement experience. What home improvement questions do you have for him? Well, we'd like to hear from you, so give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Good morning. Wow, it is really warmed up out there compared to the beginning of the week. That's not good necessarily for our roofs and for creating ice dams, right?
Well, actually, the outside temperature doesn't make much difference.
Ah, so what does cause it?
The temperature makes the difference.
Okay.
When it's nice, now, yesterday of driving home, my car said it was 43 degrees, and the weather guy said it was 42. Well, that's great. So what's happening there is snow is melting from the roof, but it's mostly melting from the top down. So the upper layer of snow on our roof is melting, and maybe it's dripping off the edge and creating a few icicles, or it's just plain evaporating. But when we have an ice dam, it isn't the upper layer that melts, it's the bottom layer. It's the layer right next to the shingles. And the reason why that happens is that your attic temperature, and therefore the wood sheathing on your roof and the shingles on your roof, are above freezing. So if your attic is 35, 40, 45 degrees, the shingles are going to be very close to that. And what is going to happen is the snow is acting as an insulator. So the warmth is going to tend to stay and melt the snow that is in contact with the shingles. So that water then runs down that warmish roof until it reaches the overhang of your house and the gutters, where, of course, it's cold because we don't have the attic heat anymore, and then it freezes. And as each layer freezes, it gets taller and taller and taller until it develops the ice dam. So our big problem is not outside temperature, but inside temperature inside our attic, because that's what's actually causing our ice dams.
Okay. Well, you know, we have a call from Seth in Amro, who's definitely got a question about that. So let's go to him right away. Hi, Seth.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. My question is, section of my house is older. It does not have soffit vents. It has gable vents on the end. In that area of the house, we heat with wood, and I develop ice dams, of course, because I believe the warm air is being trapped in the attic. I'm wondering, do I need to add more roof vents? Do I need to get a power vent up there to get the warm air out of there that does go through my ceiling? It's very well insulated. The ceiling was recently insulated, but I'm still having a problem with the ice dam.
Sure. Well, basically, there are four ways of dealing with ice dams. And the first one is venting. Now, your gable vents, if they're high in the gable and well above the insulation layer, are taking some warm air out of the attic, but they're also depressurizing the attic, so you may be drawing warm air up from the house. So we really do need to have soffit vents if it is at all possible. Now, there are houses that have basically no soffit, and there it's difficult. And what we recommend there is to enlarge the gable vents until the bottom of the gable vent is at the same elevation as the top of the insulation. And that way, we are getting some cold air in as we're getting warm air out. Now, if we do that and add ridge venting, which is the most effective upper venting, what's going to happen is our gable vents are going to have air coming in, and it's going out through the roof, and so we're going to be sucking that warmth out. I mean, warm air wants to rise, right? So it's going to head up to the gable vent, and then as it can't depressurize the attic because the gable vent is going to let the air in. The second issue you may have, Seth, is even though you've got a lot of insulation up there, you may have a lot of air leaks. Older houses, around 40% of the heat in the attic is due to air leaks, not due to radiant loss through the insulation. So if we've got uninsulated hatches, if we've got wall plates, electrical penetrations, where the plumbing goes through, where the chimney goes through, if all of those are leaking warm air into the attic, we've got a problem. Now, the venting is going to help get some of it out, but sealing up everything you can is really important. Unfortunately, the only way to really know how much your attic or your ceiling is leaking is to have an energy analyst come in. With a thermal camera, you can see some of it, but if you do a blower door test, that's going to tell you a lot. And they will actually be able to tell you how many cubic feet per minute of infiltration, exfiltration you have in that part of the house. So every time Larry and I do a program in the winter, we're always saying, think about getting an energy inspection. It goes for all of our other listeners. We really need to put science to some of the stuff to be able to really know what to do. We don't want to just throw money at things. We want to know exactly where to put that money to get the best bang for the buck, the best return on investment.
Okay, thanks for asking that question, Seth. And kind of go to back to that, John. Besides the ice dams, and we get the ice dams, so what damage does that cause? I mean, don't they just go away in the spring?
Oh, no. No. No, it's amazing what it can do. And, of course, your insurance company doesn't want to cover it either. But what we've had is ice coming down into walls on older houses, damaging the plaster, wetting the insulation. We've ended up having people tear parts of the inside of their house out. And the problem on the newer houses, if you have drywall, you know, our old houses had wood and plaster. Well, it's basically old wood with resin in and rocks. Well, that doesn't get moldy real quick. Houses with drywall, all you need is one good ice dam, and you've got mold in your walls, and then you're tearing things apart. And the insurance companies go, well, that's not a plumbing leak. I guess we're not going to cover that for you, though sometimes they will. So we really can get a lot of damage to the house. Our insulation gets wet, so we're losing more heat. We can get mold. Things can warp. All of a sudden, our windows don't seem to open correctly because our wood has warped. The casing comes apart. I've even seen damage to hardwood floors because we've had so much water come down. The houses that are the worst are the ones with the really complicated roofs, the ones with all kinds of gables.
Oh, there's so many, too.
That would be really typical of the 1930s, where you had the Tudor Revival houses that have got all these hips and valleys. And the other ones that are really bad are the new houses.
Right.
Because for some reason, our architects have decided that the more complicated a roof is, the better the house looks. Well, it's just... it's disastrous. We had some new condos here in Madison. We did everything possible to decrease the ice dams, and we can't eliminate them because there are so many corners and so many air leaks that without tearing the roof off and redoing everything, we couldn't completely eliminate all of the air leaks and all of the ice dams. So old construction and new construction, it doesn't make a lot of difference. If things are not well air sealed and not well insulated, we are going to get ice dams.
So what, for those who may have never seen one, what are we looking for on a roof to see that shows that we have one?
Well, the first thing we're going to see is we're going to see a lot of icicles. And I've seen houses with 6-foot icicles. They were dangerous. And then we'll look at the gutters, because most of our houses have gutters, and we'll see that the gutter's filled with ice. And often we'll actually be able to see 2, 3, 4, 5 inches of ice in the gutters. Often we cannot see up onto the roof. But if we had x-ray vision, what we would see then in back of that ice dam is liquid water. And the problem with that liquid water is it works upwards through the shingles, because the shingles are used to having water flowing down, not water sitting on top of them. So the water works through the shingles and then down through the roof sheathing, and then usually this is near the outside wall. So we might end up with some drips in the ceiling within a foot of the outside wall, but a lot of the water goes into the outside wall, and then we have some real problems. Now, if you think you had ice dams on your house, one thing to do is to look at the exterior. If you have old-fashioned cedar siding, you are probably going to see some brown stains peeking through the paint. And sometimes these stains are really quite bright. But if you've got odd staining under the overhangs of your house that obviously isn't caused by rain, you've probably had ice dams in your house. More difficult to tell with brick, because brick, most of the water drains down in back of the brick, and sometimes that water ends up in the basement. So those are two of the things you can look for, is look at during the winter, but then all year round, you can simply look for stains.
And is there anything we can do if we have them right now to get rid of them?
Pray for sun and warm weather.
Okay. All right. So they're really...
I've seen people throw salt on their roof.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't do really well for the bushes and the plants next to the house foundation. You will see a lot of houses with heat tape.
Uh-huh.
You'll see these V-shaped patterns on the roof, and then the heat tape is run in the gutters. And what people are trying to do there is by the use of heat, they're trying to keep something open so the water can flow off of the roof. And that works, except heat tape, of course, takes energy. And heat tape can occasionally cause a fire. So a heat tape, if you know you've had problems previous years, if you're not quite ready to attack it, you can put heat tape up on the roof. When I inspect homes, I'll see all kinds of houses that have an electrical outlet in the soffit. I go, oh, this house probably ice dams. Mm-hmm. And we ask the owners, and they go, oh, yeah, that's where I put that heat tape in the winter.
Okay. All right. Well, if you have questions about ice dams, or if you have questions about anything regarding home improvement, now's your time. We've got open lines, so give us a call. 1-800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email, too, if you'd like, but don't make them too long. It gets a little complicated. Give us a call. Ideas@WPR.org. And this is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Mackenzie Crummy is our on-air producer today, and Tyler Ditter is our technical director. And our guest on the Larry Mueller Show today is John Freiberger, a Wisconsin registered home inspector. Are you having problems with your house? Well, join in by calling 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we were talking about ventilation earlier. Obviously, good thing to have some ventilation, but sometimes too much is not good also, is that right? What are some quick fix for some air leaks?
Well, the air leaks, often there aren't quick fixes.
Okay.
And we've had older homes I really like when I inspect an old house and it has really minimal insulation, because then what I suggest to people is simply remove the old insulation. And the two-part spray urethane foams that we have nowadays are absolutely wonderful, because they kill three birds with one spray, so to speak. And it's expensive, so we don't need to put 10 inches of it in an attic to have a really well-functioning attic. But what we can do on houses, well, from the 1860s on, is what we can do is we can get the insulation of the attic. And it's sort of interesting. It's really easy to take insulation out of an attic if it's loose. Insulation companies have these giant trucks, and they're a big vacuum cleaner. And they send a guy up there with a 6-inch tube, and in 2 hours, there's no insulation in your attic anymore.
Hmm.
So then we always tell people, think about what you want to do. You want new recessed lights. You want this. You want that. You want phone lines. You want CAD 5 cable. Get all that done. And then spray maybe 2 inches of urethane foam over the entire top side of your ceiling. What that is going to do is going to give you a vapor barrier, so you're not going to have water vapor going into the attic anymore, and you're not going to have winter condensation. It's going to give you an air barrier, so you're not going to have the air leaks. Plus, it's going to give you the first R14 of the insulation you need. And if you have a situation where the roof and the ceiling joists come together and there's very little room for insulation, you can put a little deeper foam there, so that area isn't a cold spot. Then you can put an inexpensive cellulose insulation as deep as you want on top of it. But that is sort of the class A way of doing it. The other thing that an energy analyst can do for you with the blower door test is they can show you what's leaking. And you can push insulation aside up in the attic. You may find that you've got to put a fire type sealant or fire pillows or fire caulk where your chimneys come through. You may find that you have things like kitchen hood vents that are leaking and are uninsulated, bathroom vents that are leaking around and are not properly insulated. And so with cans of like the great stuff or the professional version of great stuff, an insulation contractor can go and seal a lot of the leaks that you have in the attics. On the really old houses, if you go down to your basement, shine a flashlight where your brick chimney goes up, you'll sometimes see a 1, 2, sometimes 3-inch gap. And that might be going up through 2 or 3 stories of your house into the attic. So basically what you've got is a warm air duct next to your chimney that is taking warm air from the basement ceiling and putting it into the attic all year long. Now, we didn't, in the old days when we had coal and maybe fairly hot oil furnaces, they didn't want to put the wood right next to the masonry, so they left this air gap. So those air gaps have to be filled. Those generally have to be filled professionally. I often see where people have stuffed insulation around them, but insulation does not stop air. Fiberglass is a filter. It's not an air block. So there are things you can do short of really putting a seal over the entire attic, but it's good to have an energy analyst come in so they can point those things out to you so you don't spend a lot of time and money not being effective.
So the analyst will come in and not only tell you where the leaks are, but tell you what you should do to stop them. Is that right?
And they will usually also tell you how much money you're going to save.
Ah.
So that gives you a little bit of idea of whether you're just doing maintenance or whether you're doing an investment. And in most cases, what you find is you're doing an investment. And if you're saving 5 to 10% a year on your utility bills, well, that's sort of like buying really good quality bonds, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a guaranteed return on investment for as long as you're in that house. And I'm not a real estate broker, but I think most real estate brokers will tell you the lower your utility bills are and the more likely your house is to not have things like ice dams. I think that adds some value.
Definitely. Considering what my electrical bill was last month, I'm definitely writing this down, John. It's time. Let's go to the phones. We've got Kevin in Krivitz who has a question for you. Hi, Kevin. What's your question?
Hi. We're working on a house that's vacant right now that we purchased to fix up and, you know, have our parents stay closer to us as they get up in age. So it's empty right now. Built in the 90s, and it has poor insulation, you know, only R11 craft-based insulation up in the attic, which I know is the first place I want to attack. And kind of what you just mentioned, I'm putting in new lighting and a bunch of can lights and stuff like that anyhow. What's, you know, a house built in the 90s, first off, should I be removing that R11 and then doing what you said with that foam and then doing... You know, my goal is to get that attic up to R60. We're up pretty far north here in Wisconsin, so yeah. The higher, the better, I'm thinking. And then when should I have an energy auditor come in? After I put in all my lights and electrical and that kind of stuff, or before that?
Well, if you are going to really go at this, you can avoid doing a pre-energy audit. If you're going to just pull those bats out of the attic, and the nice thing about them is you can just basically roll them up and get rid of them. And then I would do what I had suggested as far as getting a local insulation contractor to come and put down an inch or two of spray foam over that entire attic. Now, you're going to want to change your lights out first. It's built in the 90s. Those old recessed can lights back then didn't allow insulation in contact with them. And usually they had air gaps to allow the heat to get out. The modern recessed cans, you can insulate right over, and they are also air sealed. So these houses from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and early 90s that have recessed cans in the ceiling, it's basically like you've got a 2 or 3 inch hole in your ceiling every time you've got a light. And they really lose a lot of heat up into the attics. So if you're going to go that route, get your wiring done, put your new lights in, whatever else you need to do, and then spray that attic, and then go ahead and put in a foot of cellulose on top of that. That is going to give you really excellent performance. You're going to be better than a new house. And my feeling, Kevin, is that the place where we really find the air pressure and the air loss is our ceilings. And yeah, we could tear apart the walls and try to, you know, try to work on them. But the point is, we were talking earlier with Jill about return on investment. Once you do a really good job on that attic, you're going to decrease the utility costs so much that your return on investment on other things is going to be lower. The second thing I'd take a look at is the leaks around the windows. And that, with either a thermal camera or with a pressure test, you can find out how many leaks you have around the windows. And often the leaks are between the framing and the window jams, not between the jams and the sashes. Because what we had in the 90s was very poor exterior sealing. Now, nowadays, we'll use a product like Tyvek or other house wraps, and we'll use that as an exterior wind barrier. And depending upon the type of siding you have on the house, or if you have window casing on the house, you can often take off the window casing and simply seal that from the outside. And you can take off casing on the inside, and you can use the low expansion foam to seal from the inside, or you can do both of those. So I think your big bang for the buck is going to be doing the attic really correctly. And then your energy analyst is going to be able to tell you what else really leaks. And if something else really leaks, it's going to be worth going after. If it's actually pretty good, it could be that your attic is the only investment you need to make. Does that make sense, Kevin?
Definitely, yeah. We were going to attack the exterior of the house second, and that would be adding a layer of the, you know, insulation, 4x8 sheets, reflective table, you know, reflective side on it, and then Tyvek-ing the house, and then putting new siding over it anyhow. So that was going to be secondary after we get that insulation in the attic and seal it up.
Yeah.
Kind of like what you mentioned. So.
But put your Tyvek underneath the new 1-inch sheet type foam, because it's easier that way to seal to the windows and the doors and to seal other penetrations. And then go ahead and put your foam over the top of that and then tape that foam. And that way you have a double wind and water barrier on the exterior of that house. It is going to really be tight. You're going to probably exceed, I know you will exceed the standards in the current uniform dwelling code. You'll have a better house than a brand new house if you do everything right.
Okay, well, good luck, Kevin. What a job, but it sounds like he's attacking it quite well. Let's go to Edward in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Edward.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's up?
We have an older house that was built in 1865. The air quality is terrible. Just by the virtue of the architecture of the house, air does not circulate in the house very well. The other issue we're having is we need to tackle, and this is related to air quality, we need to tackle our basement. We have an old crawl space that has open dirt. There's like canals in the crawl space where there is open dirt. And we have had problems with mold and mildew at times in the basement. So we're just trying to figure out, A, what can we do to improve the circulation of the air in the house on a budget, of course, and B, what can we do or what should we do with the basement and that crawl space?
Certainly. Edward, question for you. How do you heat the house?
It's an old furnace with the copper pipes that, you know, hot water goes through the copper pipes along the baseboards. So it's,
okay, so it's a hydronic boiler.
Yeah.
Versus forced air. Yes. Okay. It is entirely possible that most of your air quality issues in the house are due to your crawl space. And what you may be experiencing is symptoms from bad air quality from mold and microtoxins that are coming out of that crawl space. Your house, unless you've completely resided the thing, and unless you've air sealed the attic, an 1865 house is going to have a lot of air changes per hour. Mine was built in 1850, and I've done a bunch of work on it, and I'm doing more. But these old houses leaked a lot. So generally, you do not have stale air. So it's not like you've got leftover cooking fumes, carbon monoxide, you know, things like that. So I suspect that what is happening is you've got a pretty significant fungal issue in your crawl space. And what you need to do is you need to get down there and to get that sealed and to install dehumidification. Now, you can try doing it yourself, but it's not easy. And Edward, do you have old stone foundation walls?
Yes, we do. And actually, the gentleman who built the house, the south wall of the house is over 7 feet thick.
7 feet thick.
Wow.
Wow. I can tell you where to go if you have a tornado or a civil war. You have something to hide behind. Well, at least that wall is almost self-insulating, but we really need to seal this soil. The other issue that you have, you know, Fort Atkinson is an alluvial plain. You've got a lot of silt and clay there. I suspect you may have a radon issue as well. So you may want to hire one of the basement specialty contractors. They will have like a heavy white vinyl that they will place over the dirt, and they will somehow seal it as best they can against the stone walls. And you can come a little ways up on the wall, but do not go all the way to the top of the wall. You don't want to be any closer to the wood with your basement seals over the foundation walls than 8 inches. Now, 8 is the absolute minimum. 18 is ideal. And the reason is that those stone walls are taking in moisture from the soil and it has to breathe out. If you have 8 inches, you've got a pretty good chance that it's going to breathe out and not decay the wood sitting on top of it. If you have 18 inches, you're about 99% good. So do discuss that, because they may say, hey, Edward, let's just seal this right to the wood and cover the entire foundation wall. That would actually be a bad idea because it might then funnel moisture into the wood and cause decay. You probably would need to do an air test to really know if you have an issue. An air test is going to cost you $400 or $500. There are air testing firms. I don't think there's one in Fort Atkinson, but I know there are several good ones in Madison. And they're basically indoor environmental testing laboratories. They come in with a little pump and a canister. And they will measure how bad your air is. And if your air is really bad, they'll probably also visually inspect. And you may find that you actually have to do some remediation in that crawl space to make the air safe in your house. So I know that sounds a little complicated, but it is stuff that is done all the time, Edward. Does that make sense to you?
All of it does. All of it does. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and I think once that crawl space is taken care of, Jill, I think Edward's going to suddenly find that his indoor air quality problems are all gone.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So good luck, Edward. Sounds like a job, but yeah, once it's finished, like you said, I'm sure he'll be happy with that. Let's go on to Kathy in Kakana. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I have a question about the operating of the heat tapes. My house was built in the 70s, but it was a solar heated house. So it's pretty well insulated. It's pretty well everything. It's got a ridge vent up there. It's got soffit vents. It's got at least 24 inches of cellulose blown into the attic. But north-facing of the roof with a valley. Mm-hmm. Now, it's got ice dam, that sticky stuff, 3 courses up. Because I was having a backup problem.
Right.
And heat tape.
Ice and water shield on the roof.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 3 courses of it. So what is that, 3, 6, 9 feet up? Anyways, it's a lot. And
yeah.
Then this particular company, very reputable roofing company, put the heat tapes up. Now, when do I turn the heat tapes on? I've got a little dam starting right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good question. Now, there are heat tapes out there now that have an internal thermostat. And so they will turn themselves on. But, of course, if there's no snow on the roof, you really don't want them running. So I think what you have to sort of consider the history of your house. Usually, if we have an inch or two of snow, we're not getting ice dams. At least we shouldn't, because the thing is, the snow is going to be so cold because the snow is not self-insulating. Generally, what happens, we get ice dams when we have more insulation on top of our roof than we have on top of our ceilings. So that our attics are getting warm and the heat is not dissipating. So you may find that there are winters, like perhaps this winter, where you never have to turn it on because you never have more than a couple of inches of snow on the roof. But then in March, we suddenly get a 16-inch snowfall, and, well, we've got to turn it on for a few days. So I think that basically observation is what you're going to have to do. If you see ice, you turn it on. If you see heavy snow, you are probably going to get ice in that location because of its history. And I'm afraid that's about all I can advise you of, Kathy. I think that the thermostatic ones are great, but you don't want to be running them. You might have some winters where we never get an ice dam, and then we're using all this electricity. Does that help?
Well, see, I've got it's plugged in underneath the soffit, but it's on a separate circuit with a switch in the basement to turn
right,
it on.
A little
on.
Red light. You know when it's on.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. So, okay.
Well, if you've got good visibility, if you see icicles along the edge or ice building in the gutter, then we really do need to turn it on. And you do have the heat tape run through the gutter, don't you?
No. It's got gutter topper. So the heat tape is run to the edge of the gutter topper.
All right, so we're running the heat tape over the top of the gutter helmets, and we're trying to make it drip to the outside of the gutters.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, and that's the gutter helmets make it a little bit more difficult. So we may end up with giant icicles anyway, but that's okay because that's water that has melted off the roof and is out past the shingles. So I think, Kathy, we can't fine tune this too much. It's basically you're going to have to look for observation. If you see signs of either ice or snow in excess of, say, 3-4 inches, and you know how your house performs, then you flip that switch. And otherwise, we'll just leave it off.
Okay. Thank you for the question, Kathy. Now let's go to Carol in McHenry, Illinois. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question that reverts back to last year, February of 2021. We're 120 miles southeast of Madison in northern Illinois, and we had all that snow that just stuck around like I've never seen for, you know, months. And we actually had a fellow come out and shovel it off because we have a 34-year-old shake roof, which has been repaired like twice and really good like 2 years ago. And because we were debating whether we should, you know, replace it or not, but, you know, it's almost $30,000. So it leaked inside the house, like a 12-inch by 8-inch area in the family room, the first floor. And then there's an ice dam upstairs or the result of one that's a long, skinny one. Right around that, because we have a gambrel roof, which the architect, we had the house built, so we're the only owners. And along that ridge line of the gambrel, because he made it more steep because, you know, the snow that we do get. We don't get as much as you guys up there, but we get our share. And especially last year, I've never seen that where it wouldn't go away, that we get tremendous icicles. What should something like that cost? Because I've had people out here and, you know, I'm to give me estimates because we did make an insurance claim and first one we have ever had in 34 years. But, you know, what should something like that cost, you know, to have that ceiling repaired with the drywall? What are they going to, when they open it up, is it going to be like what insulation? Because we put the maximum in 1986 I think it was like R13.
Okay, Carol, I think John probably has enough info there. What do you think, John?
Okay, what I'm hoping, Carol, is that in 1986, you may or may not have had a plastic visqueen vapor barrier on the backside of your walls and above your ceiling. Now, if you take off an electrical outlet plate on an outside wall or a switch plate and shine a light in there, if the drywall isn't absolutely dead tight, if you find a thin plastic film, that is going to be good news indeed, because that means that most of your drywall has been protected by water and that the water ran down the wall between the outside sheathing through the insulation but didn't hit all of the drywall. In that case, you're going to have a problem on the ceiling that has to be taken out, but on the walls, there only may be some damage at the bottom. So you need to get a knowledgeable carpenter in there who can do, you know, start with small cuts, start a little exploratory surgery. But you may not be in terribly bad shape. You may have had a lot of water come in, but if the water didn't get to that cellulose on the backside of your drywall, you may not have a lot of mold damage.
Okay, so basically she needs to find someone who can take a look at it personally, because it's really hard for you to judge by just description, right?
It is. Yeah. And the easiest thing, you could call a local McHenry home inspector who has a borescope. You can't do that when you're inspecting a house for a buyer, but Carol already owns this house. Mm-hmm. And what he would do is he'd drill like a quarter inch, half inch hole, put the borescope in, and look around.
Okay.
And that might be worth it. You can check with the American Society of Home Inspectors for people in the McHenry area. And they have a contact thing right on the ASHI website. And you can post up there, say, looking for somebody with a borescope who can analyze some possible leaks. You could also hire somebody doing an environmental assessment. That's going to cost you twice as much. So let's maybe start with the home inspector. And if that doesn't work, then we're going to need to find a good handyman who knows how to do a little bit of drywall work. But it could be that other than the ceiling stains, the damage to that drywall, that it may be fairly limited damage.
Okay, fingers crossed for you, Carol. Thank you. Let's go on to Bill in Oregon. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I've got a vented ridge cap that runs the length of the top of my house. It's modular, and it's made of some kind of, it's not just a bunch of shingles kind of piled up. It's actually some kind of structural thing that's built in there. Mm-hmm. In the recent windstorms, I've lost some shingles off of these ridge caps, though not off the rest of the roof, but just off this vented cap area. How big of a problem is that? Or how immediate of a problem is that?
Yeah, fortunately, it's not a very big problem. And you had some winds that were, I know you had 58-mile-an-hour wind in Oregon recently, and it may have been higher than that. And what we're doing there is we're nailing basically, it's probably like a black PVC sort of structure underneath, and it's a little bit hard to really get the nails to grip well. Possible that what the roofer needs to do is use a long nail that actually gets into the sheath and goes right through the ridge vent. But what you have is that the shingles are up there for show, Bill. You don't want this big black thing, you know, sitting on top of your roof. So we go over the top of it with ridge shingles, which is a separate type of shingle and lighter weight than if you have a laminated shingle. So any local handyman or roofer should be able to take care of that for you. Or if this is a low-pitched roof that you can safely go up on yourself, you can match up the shingles and get the right length nails at the hardware store there in Oregon and do it yourself. But if it's obvious, if it's a steep roof, you do not want to be getting up on anything more than like a 412 roof. I tell homeowners to stay off of.
Good advice for sure. Thanks for the call, Bill. We're talking about home improvement with John Freiberger. He is a Wisconsin registered home inspector. What questions do you have about your home? Give us a call. We do have open lines, 800-642-1234. And you can always send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, we'll look at what it takes to build and maintain a greenhouse and how to care for the plants inside. That's tomorrow starting at 11 on the Ideas Network. And right now we're talking home improvement. And we do have a couple of calls in, but we've got a couple of lines open. So give us a call, 800-642-1234. Or like I said, you can send an email, ideas@wpr.org. And we do have an email from Michael in Fitchburg, and he's asking if raking the lowest few feet of snow off the roof is an effective way to prevent ice dams, or will the dams just form above the raked area?
It's when I do home inspections, you look in the garage and there's a snow rake, you know, aluminum rake with a 20-foot handle. You go, well, these people have ice dams. It does indeed help, but it does not prevent ice dams. but it certainly does help because you're removing the snow that is in one of the areas where we have the most heat coming up from the house, where we have the rafters and the joists coming together. You know, our roofs are all triangles, basically. It's two triangles put together, right?
Right.
When you get to the pinpoint of that triangle, we've got the wall plate from the outside walls with all the holes in it where they've put down the electrical, et cetera. And then we have very little insulation. So that part of the roof often is warmer than the rest of the attic. So by raking that area, we may find that we're lucky enough that the snow above the bottom 3 or 4 feet doesn't melt, or it would melt in the bottom 3 or 4 feet. So if that is working on Michael's house in Fitchburg, I would continue to do it. Now, long term, if we have an ice dam, we have a problem. The problem may not be that the ice dam, because you can prevent it with the raking or with the heat cable or something, but we have heat loss from our houses, and we are sending a check to Alliant Energy or MG&E or We Energies or somebody to melt snow from our roof. And that's not a good use of our money.
No.
So everybody really needs to, if you have a problem, you need to have the problem analyzed, and the analysis is going to be a mixture of air leakage and insulation issues. And all of this stuff is easy and not terribly expensive to fix. Certainly, it is a lot cheaper than, you know, Carol is dealing with in McHenry with the leaks coming into her house.
Right. Okay, well, let's go back to the phones. We've got Bill in Arcadia with a question. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I'm so happy to be on. With this subject, I can't believe that I could get on. I'm so anxious to talk to John.
Great.
So our issue is that we have a house built in 2000, but we didn't finish the upstairs until 10 years later, and the windows were installed before when we built the house, and they're big and they're two pieces. One is rectangular, and the top part on two of these window locations now is circular at the top, and all that may be inconsequential. But what the problem is that we haven't finished around the windows completely yet, so there's not a lot of insulation. I had some sprayed on around the windows, but we are getting an incredible amount of moisture. I mean, to the point of, you know, big ice chunks, you know, I mean, thick ice around the outside of the windows and around the windows themselves. And I'm just wondering if there's anything you could suggest.
Hmm. Well, I wish I had a picture of that, Bill. What kind of siding do you have on the house?
Vinyl.
Vinyl siding. Okay, and then you've got like a vinyl or a metal casing around the windows. And then you are seeing ice forming on the siding and the casing around the windows. Is that correct?
Not the siding, just on the inside. Around the casing. Not so much the casing even, but more in the more around the window itself. On the glass. I'm going up there right now. I did put a dehumidifier on it, and that seemed to really help.
Yeah, that would help. Now, and this is on the exterior or the interior now?
Interior.
Oh, interior. Oh, okay, I thought you had on the exterior, Bill. That's why I was okay. All right. So interior. That is basically, you are correct in dehumidifying. Because what we have is you probably have humidity in the house higher than the 40% that we suggest for the winter. So if you've got standard glass, stuff that perhaps meets the Energy Star specification with a U value, I believe it's 0.27. What is going to happen if you have 40% humidity and it's 70 degrees in your house?
when the temperature of that glass hits 43 degrees, you're going to get condensation on it. And when it hits 32 degrees, you're going to get ice on it. If your humidity in the house is 55% and the indoor air temperature is 70%, when that glass hits 53 degrees, which is not terribly cold, you're going to get condensation and then ice at 32. So what we have there is we have windows that don't have great performance. And there are lots and lots of different types of glass for windows. And, you know, in 2000, building science wasn't quite as evolved as it is now. We didn't understand as much about glass. And, in fact, our standards for glass still are really, really lacking in Wisconsin. I think that a 0.27 U factor, which works out to be about our 3.5, is really too low for Wisconsin, especially if we get to northern Wisconsin. And I recommend better glass for people. But you're not going to go and change out these windows because they're only 22 years old. So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to try to keep your humidity between 35 and 40%. And that is going to reduce the condensation. But when it gets really cold outside, it's not going to eliminate it. Do not put drapes, blinds, or anything else like that over the windows. If it is possible, there are companies that make interior storm windows or exterior storm windows, because by adding a storm window, you are going to get about a 25% increase in the thermal resistance of the windows. So I would go with the dehumidification first, make sure it's no higher than 40% up there, which means you're good until it hits about 43 degrees outside or colder. And if that doesn't work, then we're going to have to think about upgrading these windows. And the easiest way of doing that is to be able to add a storm, as long as that configuration works well with your vinyl siding and the exterior of the windows. Does that make sense, Bill?
It does. So we don't keep this real warm upstairs because it's basically an unused space unless we have company. Yeah.
Right. Right, exactly. Because ambient air temperature. So let's say you're keeping it 50 upstairs. Well, that glass is going to hit that 43 degree temperature pretty quickly. So the warmer you keep it, the warmer the glass is going to be and the less condensation you're going to get. So it's a trade-off, spending money to heat that second floor versus cleaning up the mess and the long-term damage perhaps to the windows if they're wood windows due to the condensation. But keeping the air temperature up always helps. And 50, I think, is simply too cold. My other concern, Bill, is that the worst ones I had is I had a couple left their condo. I went to Florida for the winter and turned the heat down to like 45 degrees. They came back. Their entire basement was white with aspergillus mold. It cost $15,000 to clean the basement. Because once we get condensation on the windows, we're going to start getting condensation on the outside walls. We start getting condensation on the outside walls, and we've got 19 or 2,000 drywall. We can start getting mold in that. So I really think we need to increase the winter temperature. I always tell people, even if they're leaving their house in the winter, they really should try to keep it heated to 60 degrees.
Ooh, that's hard to hear, I'm sure, Bill. Does it help to keep the air circulating too, John? Or does that
not necessarily?
No? Okay.
Now, what we have on a lot of houses, what you'll notice is that the heat registers are under the windows.
Yes, always.
And yes, that helps, because then what we're doing is we are warming the air on the windows. But if we're just putting a ceiling fan on and circulating the air, all that does is perhaps brings more moisture against the windows. So the stratification, it sometimes may be our friend. So unless we have the heat ducts right under the windows, I don't think that it's worth like running fans or anything.
Okay. All right. Great tips there, Bill. Good luck with that. Let's take one more question before the news here. We've got Tom in Buffalo County. Hi, Tom.
Yes. Hello, John. Yeah, last summer I had a problem with water in the basement. And really, I'd never had water in the basement before in 30, 40 years in this house. And the house is 103 years old, has a poured concrete wall, poured concrete floor. The only thing I could determine was that there was possibly some water seeping up through a crack between the wall and the flooring due to water saturation in the soil. It was after we'd had that three-day rains.
Right.
And I live very near the Mississippi River. So I'm right there at the level of the river.
All right, Tom. You know what, John? I'm going to give you time to think about that because we're going to be taking a break.
After the news.
Yep, we're talking with home improvement expert John Freiberger. Join in by calling 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to WPR.org. And we'll be back, like I said, right after this break for the news, and we'll find out what's going on with that leaking basement. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau on the Ideas Network. John Freiberger is back with us today. John owns Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg and is with us every couple of months to address your home improvement concerns. What home improvement questions do you have? Join the conversation, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas at WPR.org. And before we broke for the news, we were talking to Tom in Buffalo County, who had some water in his basement last summer for the first time in, 40-some years. What do you think, John? What's going on there?
Well, I think Tom has it correctly diagnosed. I think it's hydrostatic head pressure. Buffalo County is one of the prettier counties in Wisconsin, very complicated because lost to deep river valleys, incredible number of streams. And when we get heavy rainfall, because in a lot of places in Buffalo County, the rock is pretty close to the surface, especially if you're living in the valleys, things can get pretty saturated. And from what Tom is describing, water coming up between the wall and the floor, that's hydrostatic head pressure. So basically, yeah, the soil is saturated, and your house is basically has become a boat because we have water underneath it and beside the hull, the foundation wall. And so it's going to seep in. So the question is, how much of a problem is this? My house, 1850, fieldstone foundation walls, it'll leak just about every rainfall a little bit. Does it bother me? No, not at all. I don't have a finished basement. I don't store furniture down there. I don't put cardboard boxes down there. I just let it leak. I did put in drain tile to make sure that I can collect the water. And that's what we can do if we really have persistent issues. Now, drainage, basically, we take a look at three different ways. One is make sure you get gutters on your house so you get the water away from your house. Number two, have soil around your house so it drains at half inch per foot for 10 feet, which means 5 inches a drop for 10 feet around the house. And if that doesn't work, we probably have hydrostatic head pressure. And then if we really want to get rid of it, we have to put drain tile in. But we're going to be from $1,500 to $10,000 for drain tile. So you have to ask yourself, is it worth it? Or if it's leaking every 30, 40 years, only when we get a really wet year, do we just leave it alone? Because that kind of seepage is not going to be a problem for the 103-year-old concrete walls that Tom has on his house. So you've got to decide how much it bothers you. And if it doesn't really bother you that much, and if it's not structurally bothering the house, sometimes we just say, let's put our money elsewhere.
Okay, great. Thanks for that call, Tom. Let's go on to Nick in Appleton. Hi, Nick. What can we help you with?
Good afternoon. I had a question regarding my fireplace insert that we had installed in 2019. I had a reputable company come out and do the installation. Nothing was really said as far as code. Here we cut to yesterday. I had a chimney sweep out. And basically, their advice was, I do not use my fireplace insert. Their reasoning was that it was inserted into a prefabricated chimney and fireplace build. ultimately, who would I go to as the expert and the final say on what is okay or safe to do? I have obviously A, the installer saying everything is fine, and B, the inspector saying pump the brakes, we don't advise using this. So
now, Nick, tell me what you mean by a prefab chimney. Do you mean a metal chimney or a masonry chimney?
It is not a masonry chimney.
It's a metal chimney. It's an A-vent?
Yep. Correct.
Correct. Okay. Well, this one is perplexing because most A-vents are fine if they've got – there are rules for A-vents, and you can look those up online if you know the manufacturer. It'll tell you how many degrees of change you're allowed, how much horizontal versus vertical, et cetera. Basically, if you want advice from somebody, you want to see if they are Chimney Safety Institute certified. That's sort of the key word. That means, and only about 10% of the sweeps are Chimney Institute certified. So I would check that with that sweep. If he is, I would get something in writing. If there is an issue with the installation by the contractor in 2019, I am not an attorney and do not take legal advice from me. But call an attorney, because I believe the attorney may say to you, if they signed a contract with you under Wisconsin contract law, it's either five or six years liability to repair any defects in their contract from the date of signature. So if there really is something wrong, and go to a CSI installer, and there should be one in Appleton. Appleton's a good-sized city, or maybe there'd be one in Green Bay. Get it written up. Talk then to the installer and say, here's what appears to be wrong. Please come back and fix that. If that doesn't work, well, you know, then one can always write a letter and hire an attorney.
Yes, one can always do that. Oh boy, Nick, how
that's kind of, to avoid it.
Yeah, we sure do. How discouraging that is. And he's been using it, obviously. So, makes you wonder on that. If you've got a question, please give us a call. We do have open lines, so 800-642-1234. Our next caller is Jerry in La Crosse. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, this is Jerry. A recessed light fixture question.
Yes.
And the house was built back in the late 1990s, and I remember when we installed it, it said not to insulate around the recessed light fixtures because I guess heat buildup or whatever. And is there anything other than replacing all these fixtures that I can do now? I did go to LED light bulbs in it, so they shouldn't produce the same amount of heat. Can I insulate the existing fixture?
No. It's got a UL label in it, and you've got to follow the UL label. Now, if the UL label says no insulation contact, then there's no insulation contact. Now, if you know the manufacturer of the light, you may be able to get some information. Now, what we have seen people use in attics where they don't want to change out the lights is it looks like a polyethylene or a some sort of foam insulate. It looks like a rose cone. It's in the attic over the top of the light, but there's enough cubic inches or cubic feet of air in there that it doesn't get overly hot. So basically what you're doing is you're making the light and what is surrounding the light condition space with some heat dissipation area by enclosing this. Now, you may want to talk to an insulation contractor in La Crosse who knows about these things, because it is obviously expensive to tear out all these lights and put in insulation contact airtights. So get a little bit of professional advice. Look it up yourself. If you look inside the lights, it's probably going to have a label. You know, it's going to say whoever the lighting company was. And you may be able to go to them and simply ask the question, how many fractional or cubic feet of space do I need around this light before I can have insulation? And if we can find one of these little rose coney sort of things, or might look more like a styrofoam cooler flipped upside down, and put that around it and then insulate over it and caulk it in, air seal it in tight, that may be the inexpensive alternative.
Okay.
That help, Jerry?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate that. And we did get an email from Jack, just to clarify something. What is the difference between heat cables and heat tapes?
I think one is round and one is flat.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Best I can come up with. Generally, I think the ones we see on the roof are cables. That is, they are round because we are bending them usually at a 45 or 60 degree angle versus the ones where we have people with bad insulation and cold basements or cold walls, and they are wrapping it around steel or copper water pipes. Those are usually flat, so that more of the heat goes into the pipe than into the air. So I think that that's basically it. A cable is for the roof. A flat is generally for the pipes.
Okay. Now we've got Carol in Green Bay with a question. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. I have a question about my windows. In the front of my house, I have four very large, like, bay windows, four panels. And this summer, I noticed on the exterior, the metal base at the bottom of the windows has started to separate from the glass. I had a window person come. He said, no, that's probably a contractor problem. So right now, there's just some support placed underneath that until spring. Solution to that? I mean, I'm hoping not to replace the windows.
Oh, I hope so, too. But, Carol, how old are these windows?
Well, we've only been in the house 12 years. The house probably is about 40 years old.
So, and these are original clad windows.
Right. And they were a very good name brand window, but...
But, you know, even Rolls-Royces eventually roll over and die. They might be nice old clad Andersons or something like that, and... You know, the average brand new vinyl window's got maybe a 20-year life. A lot of our older windows had 40, 50, and 60-year lives. But if this is a clad window that basically is a wood window with a metal cladding on it, eventually what happens is water gets in and the wood will decay and then the cladding comes loose. And that's what you're going to have to talk to a good window person up in Green Bay and have them take a look at it. And they may say, you know, I'm going to have to pull some cladding off to look at this. And if the wood structure is rotting, then we need to change those out. And this gives you an opportunity to look at a window that has much better glass on it that will thermally transfer much less heat. So do some good research. Go to the good firms, the Andersons, the Marvins, the Pellas, and, you know, not the big box windows. Go to a window dealer. And really ask them about your options for glass, because the difference between cheap windows and good windows is about 400% as far as heat loss. So I'm afraid you might indeed be looking at a replacement problem, but do talk to a contractor or a window specialist and get some good advice from them. And then if you are going to invest in new windows, spend the money to really do it right.
Okay, thanks for that call, Carol. Let's go on to Lori in Shawano. What's your question, Lori?
I've got a property in northeastern Wisconsin, and when I got that almost 12 years ago, a month later, the insurance company said that unless I replaced the roof, which was looking a little rough, that they would drop me, and I had to get that done in 2 weeks. Well, I was out of state for my job every other week, so it didn't give me a whole lot of time to try to find somebody. And then they gave me a month, so that still only gave me about 2 weeks to get somebody. And unfortunately, the guy I got, so he gives me this brochure for different styles of roof. I picked out a cedar shake. And he said, well, we usually put those on larger houses, which wasn't true, because then later when I had to fill out information for the warranty, I called the head office of this Girard Roofing out in California, talking to this lady, and she said that they put that on doghouses to match people's houses so they could put it on my size house. So I don't know why the guy lied about that. And then he went in on a Tuesday, the the Saturday before, we were supposed to sign the contract for him to do this, but he was drunk, so he didn't want to drive, which is responsible, but not for me on my side. So, yeah, and the next week when I talked to somebody about it, this my boss said, you know, you don't want some drunk up on your roof putting a roof up there, so you better call somebody else. And he wasn't supposed to be there till the next day, so I talked to my brother and tried to get this number because I didn't have it with me to call this guy and say, you know, I'm going to go with someone else. But they had already started the roof a day early, and I thought, okay, it's done. Well, that winter or the following winter, even though this roof hadn't been leaking with the old worn-out roof on it, it did this winter because I had two ice jams on the east side and the south side. And this water was pouring in on the east side when everything warmed up and started melting. Now, because I didn't trust this guy to be back on my property again, the company, I talked to the regional guy, I talked to another guy that was above him, and they said, well, you cannot sue unless you have, let this guy make things right. But I didn't want him out there again. They sent another guy up. And he said that the roof was not prepared properly, but they wouldn't reimburse him to do the work that needed to be done. So now it's 12 years later. And I heard that you had talked about to that other guy about how with contracts, I don't know if it affects with roofing too, even though the company's out of the state, if they're, you know, still liable for that 12 years later.
Okay. Again, I'm not an attorney, but I do listen to them when I'm in court. And basically, Wisconsin has this thing that is called a statute of repose. Basically, after 10 years, you're out of luck, and there's basically nothing you can do. And my understanding of home improvement, Wisconsin has good home improvement laws. The consumer protection people at Ag Trade and Consumer Protection are really good. How a contract is written, what has to be in the contract, all of that stuff is very carefully controlled by state law. And it's one of the few things in state law that actually is pro-consumer. Most of the stuff's pro-industry, frankly. But consumer protection in Wisconsin is really good. But simply, this is simply too long for you to have any recourse. So what you're probably going to want to look at is having a roofer come in and redo the lower part of the roof. It's entirely possible that they did not put ice and water shield down, which would have helped you. You may have to take off the bottom 3 or 4 feet of the shingles and shakes, put on the ice and water shield, and then redo the shake roof. And if it's a real shake roof with hand split shakes, basically what you've got is you've got the shakes and then you have a layer of asphalt, usually 30 pound, another layer of shakes, another layer of 30 pounds. And that's a good roof. That's why they last so long. It's because basically it's an asphalt roof, and what the shingles are doing is protecting the asphalt from the sunlight. So I'm afraid you're on your own. Just make sure you get a good professional in here to repair it, because it could be that that roof is going to work another 25 or 30 years for you, so you may as well fix the lower areas. Does that make sense, Lori?
Oh, well, what I wanted to say was because I didn't get the cedar shake, and these were, they're metal. It's a metal roof, but it looks like actual shingles.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't get the cedar shake, and when this guy, the other guy came back to look at, when he looked at it, this is the not the guy who did it, but one that they sent in, he said that actually the cedar shake roof would have been better for my pitch of roof anyway, so.
Okay, well,
I'm afraid that is about all I can tell you, but yeah. I know with 12 years, I believe it's hopeless. But, you know, one can always call consumer or send an email to Consumer Protection in Madison, say, here's my problem, and they will answer you.
Okay, thank you, Lori. And let's go to John in Eau Claire. Hi, John.
Hi. I have a question about, I guess, during the pandemic, we built a place here in Eau Claire and left the basement unfinished and waterproofed and all that good stuff. The question I really have is we're looking to finish it, and I've got a couple quotes on some closed cell foam insulation after we run the electrical and whatnot. Is that, I know with energy prices increasing, is there some guidance on whether or not this is economically viable, or some best practices, or some information you could kind of point me to?
Mm-hmm. Now, John, let me ask you a couple of questions here. Are we looking at the closed cell foam for the sill boxes, or the sill boxes and the walls as well?
Yeah, right now I just have, like, batting in there. I was going to do – the quotes I had was to essentially do everything, remove the batting and replace it with the closed cell foam.
And in the sill boxes we're talking about, not on the foundation walls. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
Correct, yes. No, I think that is a very good way of going. As we talked earlier about the attics, it's going to stop the air leaks because there's an air barrier. It's going to stop vapor transfer, and it is also going to give you about R7 per inch. So I think it's an excellent thing. The only caveat is that if you have a masonry or a stucco, real live stucco exterior, then I wouldn't use it. But if your house is siding, you know, vinyl siding, metal siding, LP siding, cedar siding, whatever, then that is a really good way of, that is the best way of insulating your cell boxes.
Okay, thank you very much, John. Appreciate the call. And we got Bob on the line from Jacksonport. And Bob, we've got a minute. So we have a comment. So make it short.
Okay, I'll be quick. Okay. True story. I'm a retired weatherization contractor working in Marinette. I'm doing dense pack cellulose on the sidewalls of a house, north side of the house. I look over to the south. I see huge billowing clouds. I go, oh, my goodness, I'm burning the house down. I run over there. What do I see? Here's a commercial airliner, plane de-icer, two stories up, blasting away at the guy's ice dams on his eaves. In Marinette, they manufactured these ice removal machines. And he took it home for lunch break and was doing his ice dams. I lost probably 2 years running from one side of the house to the other, thinking I'm burning the house, just to see this guy with the ultimate ice dam solution blasting away.
All right. Well, thanks, Bob. And John, that's an interesting story to go out on, right?
Bob, I think you should talk to him. You're going to open up this franchise here in Wisconsin and the northern Midwest, and you're going to be a rich man soon.
I think so. Thank you so much, Bob, and thank you so much, John. I learn so much every time you're on. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
We've been talking with John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg. Hope you can join us again tomorrow for Garden Talk. We'll be looking at adding a greenhouse to your house and talking about how to take care of the plants inside. And by way of full disclosure, we should mention that Freiberger Consulting is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm in for the vacationing Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. Stay well.